Money FM 89.3, best of prime time. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Judging by Monday's session for markets in across Greater China, we're seeing that stocks are starting to make a bit of a recovery on hopes for more stimulus from Chinese government officials. But there are still a lot of questions coming, particularly from both the tech and property space. And of course, last week, the big news was that China Evergrande and Caixa were two property developers that were placed on a restricted default by Fitch Ratings. What might this do actually for overall market and economic sentiment out in mainland China and across Hong Kong? And also, what can we make of all these new new issues and regulatory issues surrounding the tech offers and tech firms that are facing pressure from both Beijing and Washington, D.C.? Well, today on Money FM 89.3, we're joined once again by Mr. Brock Silvers, the managing director for Cayenne Capital. He joins us all the way from Hong Kong to tell us what he makes of these issues coming from the prop and tech space in Greater China, and if these are harbingers for things to worry about. Mr. Silvers, thank you so much for joining us today. Glad to hear you and your loved ones are still safe and in good health during these times. And welcome back to the show, sir. It's been a while. I hope you're having a great Monday.
Yeah, it's great to be back on primetime.
Awesome. Great. So thanks, Brock. So listen, it finally happened. China Evergrande and its subsidiaries being declared at a restricted default by Fitch. Some say this was a long time coming. Some did see that the odds of this actually happening were fairly high. There's now talk of a restructuring hitting China Evergrande. But talk to us about what this means for China now that China Evergrande is in that restricted default. And where might Evergrande go from here?
Well, look, the government has now forcibly taken a seat at the table via the Guangdong Working Group, so-called. Now, that doesn't replace Evergrande management, but it does place the company under closer government supervision, which I think is a good thing. The old way simply wasn't moving with sufficient urgency, in my opinion. Now, the negative view is that regulators have been reinforcing the idea that Evergrande won't be bailed out. It will simply be ring-fenced. The positive view is that the company says it intends to restructure onshore and offshore obligations together. And that's a positive thing for dollar bond investors who previously were mostly being ignored. Mm-hmm. Now, given the Fitch downgrade last week, I'd say there's greater pressure to move quickly. And I'd expect, a more specific proposal before long.
Evergrande's not the only one struggling. We also heard of Caixa Group last week missing out on bond payments potentially, and both developers are struggling to sell assets, raise funds, and even renegotiate things with bondholders. There are now concerns that we might see even more property developers actually face these issues. Is this perhaps becoming more systemic, and could there be a potential for this to impact the greater Chinese economy, given how big the property sector is as a portion of the world's second largest economy, Brock?
You know, the problems indicated by the so-called three red lines are omnipresent throughout the sector. This is just kind of how the game was played, and everyone was playing by these rules. The larger companies who played better, like Evergrande and Caixa, perhaps, are now in the most trouble. Now, if the three red lines were applied ruthlessly and government bailouts were off the table, I think the sector would quickly find some sort of systemic collapse. There would be terrible economic consequences. But look, that's just not going to happen, in my view. Beijing is extremely unlikely to regulate itself to death. We're already seeing government entities talking about, quote unquote, responsibly easing regulations on real estate developer debt. Look, China has a number of very pressing economic problems right now, but I don't expect a self-inflicted real estate collapse.
All right. And previously, and I think the last time we spoke, Brock, you mentioned that Evergrande's bonds may be oversold. You're one of the ones in the camp that actually thinks there might be some value in these. But given the recent restricted default, how does this influence your outlook now on Evergrande and maybe other property bondholders? Property bonds out in mainland China?
Well, I am an Evergrande dollar bond investor. And look, honestly, it's a riskier proposition than the last time we spoke. But investors who got in before the crisis, I think, have little hope at this point, but I still think the ultimate deal is going to be north of current pricing. So I would say for risk-on investors, I think Evergrande's dollar bonds are a very reasonable play right now. Now, there are perhaps other interesting opportunities throughout this sector, The problem is, once you get beyond the top names, you know, it's hard to say, but Beijing may be more willing to sacrifice the smaller names than it is the bigger names.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned a while ago that we have government officials now joining the working committees to help make sure that Evergrande and, say, other developers might also be able to right the ship. In Evergrande's case, though, the big question here, Brock, is how quickly they can raise funds to meet that mountain of liabilities. What kind of difference might the addition of these government officials have in helping Evergrande speed up the realization of some of these asset disposals, perhaps righting the ship more, righting the ship and bringing them to steadier waters?
This is something that we saw play out in a similar fashion at HNA. You know, existing management is from a business perspective and an emotional perspective, sort of tied to the current corporate. The current corporate investments in a way that government officials are not. So the government may be more willing to entertain deals that that executives had previously been loath to accept for reasons of pricing, strategy, et cetera. I think the government officials will be much more ruthless in making sure that those government interests are protected rather than company interests. And from a dollar bond investor perspective, that may be a good thing for us.
All right. We're speaking to Brock Silvers, Managing Director for Cayenne Capital here on Money FM 89.3 to talk about some of the risks coming out of the property and tech sectors out across Greater China. And I want to shift our focus out to the tech space. There's a number of things we can start talking about, Brock. But first off, I do want to start off with that momentous decision by DD Global, that hasty exit from U.S. markets and the repivot to Hong Kong. I think it was only 153 days they were actually on the New York Stock Exchange, just about 5 months since they listed out in New York. How does this cloud the regulatory outlook for Chinese tech? And what were your thoughts when you actually heard that DD Global was leaving New York just about 5 months after they listed?
Well, I think it was expected at this point, but there's no question the entire DD episode was a disaster, both for U.S. investors and for China's kind of market outlook. In fact, I'd say one of the worst conceived IPOs in recent history. Now, in showing disregard for investors and essentially forcing DD's repatriation, Beijing also highlighted questions into China's basic investability. You know, there's no overseas listed Chinese company that couldn't be similarly treated. And I'm just not sure why an offshore investor would take on the risk of relisting or major fines or even mandated business model changes. I'd also say that, moreover, despite, I think, an earnest denial in China, the DD episode calls into question the viability of BIE structures. And I think it's only a matter of time, in my opinion, before those are also kind of targeted to some extent. I'd say this is my advice to everyone. If you own VIE shares at this point, I wouldn't hold them. For me, it's not worth the risk.
Right. And that's the thing, too, right? What if there is always that risk that Chinese regulators might go to all of these companies, and there's a number of them, plenty of them, that are under VIE structures, a lot of them also listed, and say, hey, you know what? You have to unwind these structures. This could take time. This could unleash more more unpredictability in the markets. If that is done en masse, actually, I mean, what kind of... Would I be too drastic in using the word turmoil to describe what that would mean for markets?
No, I don't think you would be. But here's the thing. Once those ideas were to be publicly discussed as an investor, it's probably already too late to reorient your portfolio or shareholdings. The time to do that is now, while you're thinking those issues may well become relevant, but they haven't quite been brought into view. And look, a lot of these risks that we're talking about simply can't be modeled. And listed equity investing is all about defining assumptions and driving down to a value per share. And you just can't do that with these entities if you're worried that that the basic structures may be repealed in some sense, or that they may be tagged with kind of unknowable regulatory fines or similar actions. So I'd say the time to readjust portfolios is now, not when it happens.
All right. So, Brock, let's say that DiDi's plan to pre-pivot and relist out in Hong Kong actually goes fairly smoothly without that much of a hitch. But I have a question. Could they see the same action and pricing as they did out on Wall Street? And what might this mean for other companies in the Hang Seng Tech Index? Basically, give us an idea of how different life might be in Hong Kong as versus, say, out in New York for DiDi, should they be able to pull a fairly seamless switch to the Hong Kong markets?
Right. Well, first we should say it's if DiDi can pull off the listing, which I don't think is at all certain. Now, I do think there will be significant government pressure to approve DiDi this time around. So let's assume that the relisting goes through. Hong Kong often trades at lower multiples, and that's one of the reasons many of these tech companies prefer the U.S., often prefer the U.S. And I'd also say that Hong Kong's love affair with China tech may be over, at least for the moment. Hong Kong is also a smaller market, and if enough large Chinese companies repatriate, especially in the tech sector, it may start to cannibalize support for existing shares. So what I would say is that the relisting does not at all look like a decision that would have been taken absent political motivations.
Brock, very quickly, I did want to get your thoughts on the planned IPO from SenseTime. We're getting reports that they might actually decide to cancel that the IPO in Hong Kong for that AI firm based in China. And very interesting to see that they were included or added on the U.S. entity list on the same day last Friday when they were supposed to be priced. Share us your thoughts about these very interesting and surprising events, and also how this actually influences the landscape we were just talking about for Chinese tech.
Right. Look, this is a major blow to the company. There's no way around it, and it's already at least suspended the IPO. You know, U.S. individuals and institutions are now prohibited from trading in the stock. At a minimum, the prospectus and related materials would have to be updated to reflect these new risks. The problem here is that early investors in SenseTime have put rights that become exercisable in April unless there's an IPO. So there's going to be significant pressure to continue the listing. Now, ultimately, I don't think it goes forward in Hong Kong. I think it gets pulled. Perhaps SenseTime could shift to a mainland exchange and solve some of those problems, but I don't think it can do that by April. And after that, the pressure is off. So SenseTime is in a very difficult situation. And my guess is right now they're furiously taking the temperature of institutional investors.
A lot of things to consider with regards to some of these tech IPOs and also some of the risks in the property sector out in mainland China. I'd like to thank Mr. Brock Silvers, the Managing Director of Kyan Capital, for joining us today on Money FM 89.3 to discuss these two particular potential risk sources for mainland China, for greater Chinese markets, and what it might mean for investor sentiment moving forward. Brock, as always, I wish you and your loved ones continued health and safety during these times, and we look forward to next time you can join us in the show. Meanwhile, stay safe, and I hope you have a great week ahead of you out there in Hong Kong.
Thank you. Let's do it again soon.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.